The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Center Show, Show 125, Thursday, 4th of October, 2007. Show with tech.co.uk. It's great to have tech.co.uk sponsoring the show, so please click on the banner on the top of the web page and check out their site. Now this week on the show, do something a little different. I have Carlos Odor in the first of the real world interviews. Now you remember I mentioned this quite a few weeks ago, and this is where I talked to a real world user about Windows Media Center. And Carlos is a teacher from Dallas, Texas, and we talk about how he got into Media Center, what he does with Media Center, and how its simplicity and reliability is the key factor in choosing Media Center or the other solutions. I also have a quick chat with MVP Peter Neer about his new website and campaign called DropTheBox.ca. It's a campaign to get rid of the set-top box in Canada and introduce something like cable card. Peter is trying to turn it from a one-man crusade into a proper force to get a change in Canada. I'll have a listen to the interview with Peter for more details on that. I have email and news items. So first I'm going to go to an email from John McGuinness. It says, "Hi there, Ian. I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day when I heard you mention about DVD to WMV program. And as the Minister for War and Finance has about 30 hours of HDTV content to watch for her at the moment, her collection seems to grow each week, and none of which I'm allowed to delete. Space on Media Center is in short supply, so I thought I would give it a try. I've encoded a couple of movies and added them to my movies collection. I like the interface, and they run on the Xbox 360 perfectly. But when I try and play the same movies on my Media Center, I have a problem. While I can hear the music and the effects perfectly, I can't hear what the characters are saying. Is this a driver problem, and has it got something to do with the movies being encoded for surround sound? If so, where do I pick up the updated driver? Keep up the good work. Regards, John McGuinness." John also followed up that email with a second one. He says, "Me again. Ian, I was wondering if there was a way that DVD to WMV would deal with episodic DVDs. I would like to be able to save each and every episode of Stargate SG-1 as a separate WMV file. If DVD to WMV can't handle this, can you suggest something that will? Cheers, John McGuinness." Thanks for the emails, John. To address the first part of the problem, it does sound like a surround sound problem, because it sounds like you're not hearing the center channels. So I would check in Media Center that you've got stereo speakers set up and not 5.1 or 7.1, and you can do that by going into the settings and then have a look at your speaker setup. I can't think of anything else that could be doing it. It could be a driver, I guess, and your particular sound card, which you haven't said what sound card you've got, but you can, maybe there's some settings for that as well within Windows. So perhaps if you let us know what sound card you've got, and if any of the listeners have heard of this, email in ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, or you can go onto the forums and discuss it there. I'd be interested to hear anybody's thoughts on that. Regarding John's second point, DVD WMV does not deal very well with episodic DVDs as far as I remember. I had a couple of Power Ranger ones that I did for the kids, and you end up with one big WMV file rather than separate files. And the only way I could think of doing that would be to edit the files either before you converted them or afterwards, and I can't think of an easy way of doing it. So if anybody's got any good suggestions on that, please let me know, but I know that the DVD files are kind of come in chunks, and they're not related to the way that the episodes are broken up, so I don't think there's an easy way of doing that. So thanks for the email. Please keep the email coming in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I do like getting your email, so please keep sending that. Now to a couple of news items, and last week was a big week for Media Center with the announcements about the new extenders, now called Extenders for Windows Media Center, which I think I preferred the title Windows Media Center Extenders, but maybe the change is to differentiate from the V1 extenders. Anyway, there's been a lot of press around the extenders that got some good feedback from the non-Media Center press as well, from the other tech press. The interview on the show last week covered extenders quite well, but there was some extra information that came out on Thursday. HP are going to introduce Media Center TVs with extended technology, including their current MediaSmart HD TVs, which are going to get some kind of firmware upgrade later in this year, early next year. So you'll be able to have Media Center straight built into the MediaSmart TVs, which I think is a great idea. And as we mentioned in the interview, that's one thing I'd like to see. It's one less box to worry about, and wouldn't it be great if we could see these kind of extended technology built into more TVs? Also announced at the keynote were some prices, and Chris Lanier was pretty upset with the prices. Looking at the ones that have been announced initially, there were two Linksys and a D-Link extender announced. The standalone DMA 2100 was at $300, and the DMA 2200 with a DVD player was $350, and D-Link's DSM 750 was $349, which I see Chris's point, they are high, especially when you compare them to the price of a Core Xbox 360, which can do the same job, and in some respects is better. But I do think that there are people that are going to want these devices and will pay more than even an Xbox 360 because they want the silent set-top boxes. I know it's not going to help with mass market, but I think there are the people that want those. And I think perhaps over time we're going to see probably price reductions. If you do a straight dollar conversion to sterling, I mean, the $300 one works out £150, which I think is a good price, and it's a lot cheaper than the Xbox 360. But as UK listeners know, that we never get that direct exchange rate, so we'll probably see them maybe even above the £200 mark. Having said that, there's still no information on whether they're even going to be available at all outside the USA. The V1 extender's never turned up over here. So I think while the prices are high, there's still going to be a demand by the early adopters and enthusiasts, and hopefully the prices will come down. I know that Chris has upset them about them having built-in Wi-Fi, which is adding to the cost, which is unnecessary, which in sort of in my situation, it would be unnecessary because I've got a wired network. But I guess the manufacturers are trying to target the widest market initially with these devices anyway. Maybe we'll see ones without that coming down the line. Joe Belfiore, Corporate Vice President of the Entertainment and Devices Division at Microsoft, the eHome division, who presented the keynote, responded to Chris's comments on his blog, which I think was pretty good to see Joe respond. And Joe's been on the show way back, you know, nearly 2 years ago now at CES 2006. It's great that Joe took the time to comment on the post. So I'll have a look at the link in the show notes to Chris's post and to the comments, and you can make your own mind up. I'd be interested to hear what listeners' thoughts are on what you'd pay for an extender device, Ian at thedigitallifestyle.com. I also noticed that Microsoft's extender website has been updated to give some more information about the extenders, the different devices, and kind of how they fit around the home as well. So have a look at that one. Also announced at Digital Life was the beta of Internet TV. It was nice to see that demoed on in the keynote. It's USA only, so I've not been able to try that myself. Over on the Windows Experience blog, Brandon posted his thoughts on that as well. And instead, I've tried the trick of telling Media Center that it's in the USA, and where I get the icon, I don't actually get the content. So obviously they're checking IP addresses and things, which is fair enough, but I'm sure that a lot of that content could be available because it's not all premium content. So hopefully some of the rest of the world will get to see some of this Internet TV, because it is a nice idea, and the more value we can get out of our media centres, the better. So we definitely want to see that. And this week I got the great news that I've been rewarded a MVP, which is a Microsoft Most Valued Professional. And it's a great honour to get, and it's nice to know that the Media Centre show is getting the recognition. I keep doing the show because I'm still passionate about Windows Media Center and the possibilities that the platform has for the future. I still believe in it. It's a great product, and it's got great potential. There are things that you know, that aren't quite there yet, as we've talked about on previous shows. And you know, I know other MVPs have commented that, you know, we don't always quite get everything. The extended devices are high, and we haven't various things. But I still think it's a great product, and it's got a great future. And it's great being part of the Media Center community, and that's one of my favorite things. And I'm enjoying building the community around thedigitallifestyle.com. So hopefully I'll get to the MVP Summit next year as well. So it's great to be nominated for MVP. It's coming to that time of year again where I was thinking about the Media Centre Show Awards. So this is where we get to, and the community gets to vote for the favourite things within the Media Centre world. And before I get to the voting and get the voting pages set up, I'm looking for nominations. And this year I'm looking at the following categories: Best Utility, Best Free Media Centre Application, Best Commercial Media Centre Application, and Best Vista Media Centre Application. Looking for Best Enthusiast Media Centre Blog and Best Community Site. And also for Developers, a Design Style Award, which is really aimed at Vista Media Centre developers looking at Media Centre market language and to see, to sort of highlight the great style that's coming through from those applications. So if you've got a favourite application, and then you can nominate that in at thedigitallifestyle.com, and then probably at the end of October we'll have the voting pages go up for a while. And if you think I've missed a category, or one of the other categories could be better positioned, let me know. I'm open to suggestions in at thedigitallifestyle.com. So I'm looking forward to doing that, because I think it's a great way of spreading some of the great work that people are doing around the Media Centre community through these awards. Now, before I go to the real world interview, I have a quick interview I did with Peter Neer talking about his Drop the Box campaign. So have a listen to that. The date that Peter mentions in the interview has actually changed. We recorded earlier this week and the date has been changed to October 19th. So in the interview, Peter mentions the deadline of October 9th. It's actually been changed to October 19th. Right, so here's Peter. Peter Neer, welcome to the Media Centre Show.
Thanks, Ian.
I'm going to be talking today about a campaign that you've started called Drop the Box, which, from what I've seen, it looks like a campaign really to get cable card into Canada. But before we dive too much into that, just I know you're a Media Centre MVP, so I just wanted to get a quick background on sort of who you are and how you got to become an MVP.
Sure. Well, I've been involved in Media Centre for several years now. I think I got one of the first HP machines that was available here in Canada with version 1 of Media Centre, and really got involved there and started participating in news groups and communities and things like that, and was recognized by Microsoft early on for doing that. Since that point, I've actually focused a little bit more on Canadian issues, and a lot of that involves ATSC here in Canada, which some people have probably read articles on, and more recently now trying to work on getting cable card or something like it available in Canada so that users can have better access to digital content in Media Centre.
So what's the current situation then to get cable into Media Centre in Canada?
So we have a couple options right now. The officially supported options are that you can plug a analog cable into an NTSC tuner, and that will allow you to tune into unencrypted analog channels that you get from the cable company. The other option is to plug a set-top box from either the cable or the satellite companies into Media Centre, and basically, rather than using a tuner, you just do a capture in there. And this is the way that most people globally would access Media Centre. So you have an IR blaster that changes the channels on the box. The box feeds you an analog signal into Media Centre, and you capture it that way. And those are the officially supported ways to get Canadian television content into Media Centre. There's also kind of an unsupported way to get digital over-the-air broadcasts into Media Centre, and I've detailed that on my blog on the green button. But there is no way to get digital cable or digital satellite directly into the Media Centre PC. Initially, that was just an annoyance, and it wasn't a big deal because you could take that same feed and just get an analog representation of it and then put it into Media Centre, and it wasn't a big deal. But now that everything's going high def, there really isn't an option for that. You can't output analog high definition from your set-top box and then capture it in real time into Media Centre. That technology simply doesn't exist. So now the issue of getting a direct digital signal into Media Centre becomes more of an issue for everyone who really wants to get high def content.
So what's the issue then, if I said to you, well, you know, the set-top box that you get provided by the cable companies are good enough, why do you need to then get it into another device like Media Centre?
Right. One of the analogies I use for that is if you look back at the days when VCRs were really popular, And you you can go to the store and you can look at all the different VCRs that were available, and there's a really terrible one down on the bottom shelf that they don't really want to sell you because it doesn't make them too much money. But it does the job. It'll record your television. It has a 12 o'clock light that flashes at you, and it does your basics for VCRs. Or you could kind of go up to the higher levels where you've got high quality audio, you've got really cool interfaces, you've got manufacturers who are incented to innovate to get you to buy their stuff by putting in really neat features like VCR Plus and online guide data and clocks that automatically set themselves so they don't blink, and really take care of all those things that take it from being a basic device that does kind of the bare minimum to being a really innovative device that can set new features and new expectations for the market. So if you take a look at the VCR market about 10 years ago, where you could just plug it into your analog cable, you had all kinds of choice. But now, when we have digital cable and digital satellite here in Canada, really what you're doing is you're going to the VCR store with your cable company buddy beside you. He points to the one on the bottom shelf that's terrible and has absolutely no decent features in it, and says, you'll take that one, and by the way, you can pay me an extra couple bucks every month for the privilege of getting it from me. What I really want is to be able to, number one, have competition so that we can have better devices in the market, and number two, some of the devices that are already in the market have the ability to use them. And some examples of that are the TiVo Series 3 in the U.S. as well as Vista Media Center in the U.S. Both have really good interfaces compared to the cable boxes that you get here in Canada right now, and they have really innovative features that simply aren't available in Canada right now, like the sports portal in Media Center, and the suggestions in TiVo, and Amazon Unbox for movies in TiVo. Those things simply don't exist in cable boxes here in Canada right now.
And of course, you when you go to these set-top boxes, you don't own that content there, do you? You can't do anything with it. You can't watch it on other devices. It's kind of stuck in there, and it's not part of the rest of the ecosystem that you've got with your media center.
Right, and for me as a digital media file, that's one of my frustrations as well, is I want to be able to take that content that I'm paying for legally and be able to use it in any way that I want. So if you think that the only thing I want to do with that signal ever is just watch it on my TV, then, okay, maybe the set-top box is enough. But realistically, I think that the guys like me, as well as more of the general public, are going to move to wanting that content available anywhere. And that includes things like the iPod Touch, for example, is a device that I personally really want to be able to take all of my high-definition cable and bring it on the airplane with me when I go on business trips. That would be fantastic, but if it's all locked up in the set-top box, I can't do that.
Yeah. So tell us about the campaign that you started then in the website.
Sure. So I saw an opportunity to do something about this because the CRTC, which is the body that regulates cable and satellite distribution in Canada, is having a hearing in January 2008 to relook at the distribution mechanisms for broadcast television in Canada. And that includes the satellite companies, the cable companies, as well as over-the-air companies that are just broadcasting using antennas. This made the news here in Canada primarily because it's an opportunity for the CRTC to consider deregulating a lot of what we do. So a lot of people may have heard about it due to the unbundling of channels. So we're talking about finally in Canada you can get the sports network without having to get 10 other channels that you don't really want. So that's part of what they're doing in January. What I'm asking them to look at as well is the issue of cable card and the issue of really separating the cable companies from the devices that we use to watch our television. And I didn't want to get it specifically to be about cable card, because cable card is a technology that a lot of people would argue hasn't been incredibly successful in the United States. So what I've done is actually open it up a little bit and just ask them to look at two things. Number one is, if something's available to me over the air with no encryption and I can do whatever I want with it, why on earth would we want to encrypt it if we're going to be putting it over a cable instead? So the first point is, if there's a station out there that's not encrypted, then please deliver to me unencrypted so that I can just plug it right into my TV and it'll work. And the technology we use here in Canada is QAM or QAM. You just plug it into your TV. If it was unencrypted, there would be no issue. And then second is that for pay channels, I do recognize the need for the cable companies to make revenue from that, and the people who are distributing these programs to make money from that, and they've got a business model that really requires them to ensure that people are paying for watching that channel and watching the content. And for that, I think that I'd like the Canadian cable companies to look at the technologies that are out there, like CableCard, and more likely like CableCard version 2, and recommend if that's something that they could use to further open up the market for set-top boxes in Canada. So that's my request to the CRTC. And then the campaign is specifically to try to see if we can get it beyond one guy who's asking this in the CRTC. So if you want to go to have your listeners go to dropthebox.ca, there's opportunity there to submit your own letter to the CRTC so they know for this January hearing that more than just one guy is interested in this. And there's also a way for you to submit an email to your member of parliament and let them know that you're interested in seeing this on the agenda for January 2008 as well.
And the key is there's a few date deadlines, isn't it? So what's the deadline on the first part of the process?
The first part of the process is that by October 9th, which is just a week from now, and probably even sooner once we air the program, by October 9th, they want to get all of the input from everyone on what needs to be heard at the hearing in January 2008. So if you go to the website before October 9th, you can fill in the template there for sending a letter to the CRTC and then submit it via the CRTC's website, then you'll get your voice heard in that January 2008.
Right. So I really encourage any Canadian listeners, which I know there's a lot, to go to the site, use a template, and get your submission off, so you've at least got a chance of it being heard.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great idea, and you know, there's a lot of different options out there, sort of with smart cards and things like that. I know that some cable operators and satellite operators use smart cards for it, so there's no reason why they couldn't look at that technology. But what you're saying is you're not too... You know, first, really, what the technology is, as long as there's a way of implementing that so it's open and able to for TiVo and for MediaCentre and other devices to be able to operate with it all totally legally and to get whatever content you want on whatever machine you want.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I think that the public has a hunger for those sorts of interesting consumer electronics ideas that could be out there. But really, if you have only the option to buy the cable box from the cable company or not, then you're not going to get those sorts of options. It's kind of like the first car that came out, the Model T. Henry Ford said you can get any color you want so long as it's black. Well, what I'm saying is that I think Canadians want a red car.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you want the choice, and people like you want to be able to get to MediaCentre, but then, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be sort of the Mediafiles and the geeks, you know, just anybody that wants to get something like MediaCentre or TiVo working with the HD content that you've got, then, you know, this is the way forward.
Right. I actually was talking to someone I work with here who's not a digital media file at all, and he had said, you know what, I don't understand why there's a need for any set-top box. I really want to be able just to plug my cable into my TV and watch TV. And I think when you get down to the basics of what people are looking for, that sums it up pretty well. We don't need all this high technology necessarily. I just want to be able to plug my TV into my cable and have it work.
Be it whatever device you decide and whatever the market leader is and who's got the best features and suits your what you want.
Right.
Like I said, I think it's a great campaign, and I hope listeners will take action on this, and I hope some other countries will look at the same thing issues as well. Over here in the UK, we've got Sky, and they've got their own set-top box, and again, it's a closed-off environment, and there's different workarounds and things, but there's no simple solution, and I think, you know, like you, we want the freedom to choose what platform we want, regardless of who's providing the content, so I hope it's something that maybe we could replicate in other countries in the future.
Great.
But you've got enough to be going on with for now anyway, with sorting Canada out. Well, many thanks for your time today. I think it's, like I said, I think it's a great idea, and we'll keep up to date on the show with the issues, and like I said, I encourage listeners to check out the website. So what was the site to go to again?
The name of the site is dropthebox.ca.
Nice and simple.
Absolutely.
Well, like I said, many thanks for your time today, and keep us up to date with how you get on with it.
And thank you very much, Ian, for your time as well. I look forward to talking again.
So don't forget, the date that Peter mentioned there, October 9th, is now October 19th, so you've still got plenty of time to get involved. Go to the website dropthebox.ca. Now we're going to take a break, Before I do that, a competition. I mentioned the last two shows. I'm leaving it open this week as well. This is from One Voice, who are giving away a copy of Media Center Communicator and the LTB QB and wireless microphone system, so you can control your PC with your voice. And to win that, all you got to do is go to One Voice site, and there's a link in the show notes. Watch the video demo and tell me what the name of the slideshow being played is. All you need to do is send your answer to ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Tell me the town or city you're in, and the winner will be drawn at random in a couple of weeks. And if you want to try Media Center Communicator, there's a 30-day free trial of the software on the download site. Right, now a quick message from One Voice. I'll be back with Carlos Udder.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Carlos Amador, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Hi, thank you, Ian, for having me on.
And the first person to come on as the real world feature, which I've been talking about doing for some time, and really what I want to do on the real world is to talk to real users about Media Center. So I've had plenty of guests on, you know, we talked from Microsoft and the different OEMs, but I really wanted to get a feel for sort of the people's usage of Media Center. And you were kind enough to volunteer to be the first person to come on, so thanks for that, and that's a brave move.
No problem. I'm just very excited to be on. I listen to your show all the time. Every time it comes out every week, it's on my Zoom player. When I walk the dog, I forget to listen to it.
And so whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Right, and so you've been listening to the show for quite a while, have you?
Yes. Well, I started listening to it in March, but I've just been catching up on it, downloading the different podcasts, and listening to them. Like I said, when I walk the dog, so when I go work out, I have a lot of free time during the summer because I'm a teacher. So I sort of spend my free time doing working out and listening to your podcast.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good going back through to the archives, going back beyond the shows from March, so you must have listened to quite a few by now then.
Yes. Every time I get in, I went back to your old stuff that I guess when you were on the podcast network. And listening to that kind of stuff before you had your own website.
Talking about your sort of Media Center usage, how long have you been into Media Center?
I got into the Media Center in March of this year. I bought a Mint TV, Linux. It's by this guy. He has his own little website. It's called Monolith. And I had a little thing. I was trying to see how it worked. It came with a couple of tuner cards. And I just, I thought it was a little complicated. And I already had an Xbox 360 with a nice high-def TV. And I had no idea that I could hook it up to a Media Center PC. So I started working it with XP first. I downloaded I think the Zoom software, and I was using some T-Varsity to stream stuff from my computer to my television. And that didn't work the way I wanted to work, so I decided to just kind of take a risk and put the new Windows Vista on my old Mint TV computer, and it started streaming stuff, I guess the first program I downloaded was called My Movies, which I think is an excellent program.
Yeah, it certainly is.
But one of the things that I think I put this on your forum, one of the problems I saw was the networking. My wife didn't like it. I had the computer right next to my TV and my Xbox right next to it, and she was getting really frustrated with all the wiring and all the different keyboards I had around the room when I was just testing stuff out. So I had to figure out a way how to please the wife. I think that's one of the main things that I see all the time is, you know, whatever you do, you have to make sure you please the wife and the wife's happy with whatever setup you have.
So. Yeah, absolutely. You've definitely got to consider that, and you've got to consider the family, because you know, as geeks, like, we can get it all working, but unless it's usable for everybody else, and you just don't get sort of uptake on it, and like you said, the wires and everything else is something you've got to consider.
And so when I was doing the thing, I was going to buy an adapter for the Xbox, and I saw that it was they're around $90, and when I was doing the research, I read in some forum a guy was using a power line adapter, so I never even knew about these. And the great thing about these is you just plug in one and whatever outlet you have that's next to your router, and then and you can plug the other one into whatever other outlet you want, internet connection or network connection, and it's easy. So I went, and I think I paid maybe $180. It was like $80 more than the adapter, but I had a better connection, and it went well. It had a D-Link product, but in about 2 or 3 months, it just stopped working. There was some type of defect on the product, and I had some problems with them. The product was faulty, and they when I did the RMA, I got back a D-Link router, in router, instead of the power line adapters, which I didn't need. So what I did is I bought a new Link System power line adapters, which are pretty good. I get about 90 to 100 megabits per second from my computer to my 360, which is plenty of broadband to stream movies or music or play on the internet and stuff. Online gaming and stuff like that.
So do you find that the power line then is enough for to use with the video, that you don't get any sort of frame drops and you get a good video?
The only thing that I'm trying to still work on is sometimes, I guess, if there's a lot of usage on the computer and on the 360, you get some type of drop off, but it rarely happens in terms of it just. I guess the 360 and the computer stop talking to each other, and you get a disconnect. And I've seen some of those on the forum where it disconnects, and a lot of it is just some type of router problem. And that's what I'm not very good at networking. my real job is just teaching, so I'm pretty kind of new to that aspect of it. So I've been looking at what's called quality of service and opening ports and doing static IP, stuff that I didn't think I would ever have to do.
Yeah, I mean, those are the areas, aren't they, that at first it seems simple that you can just plug these things in, but when you start getting in, like you said, up ports and static IPs and stuff, it's a whole new world.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big changes in terms of... as more people start getting, you know, these routers with this wireless access, and people start getting used to, you know, using multiple devices in their homes, that's one thing I think people have a lot of problems with. I mean, I don't know how many people now are looking at firewall because their 360 can't connect to their computer, and so a lot of things that, you know, they never had to deal with in terms of firewalls and ports and all this things. Now they have to deal with sort of something that was mostly, I guess, would be just commercial stuff, where an IT manager would come up and open ports and make sure that, you know, the system is working. Now when it's going to the household, it's, I think, a whole different game. It's much more complex than it should be, especially if you have, like, a system, you know, or not a new system, but like an older system, and, you know, there's already firewalls installed and antivirus installed. And if you want a network, especially to your Xbox, you can get a lot of headaches. I don't know how many times my cousin and I called the provider, and they said, well, just refresh your router, see if you get it to connect, and open up this port and open up that. And nobody, you really don't get very good service in terms of, you know, the Microsoft says, well, it's your router's problems, and the router people will say, well, it's your internet connection problems, and they kind of give you the runaround.
Yeah, so there's not the sort of kind of one place to go to where they can give you a sort of definitive answer. There's the network people blame one set of people, and the Microsoft software is someone else. And so do you find that was the hardest thing about setting the whole thing up, was getting the network connectivity working?
Yeah, I think that was the hardest part, you know. Sometimes even when I go to my cousin's house to set up his or help him set up his system. That's one of the things we always deal with, because he might have a different computer with different software, and then you never know what software that was included that gets in the way. And I see that all the time on forum posts that somebody, you know, I think there was a Picasso something that's on HP computers that is pre-installed, and so people have a lot of problems just hooking it up. But I tell you what, I think the best way to do it is if you have a fresh install of a Windows Vista. I never had a problem just connecting it straight to Xbox. I think that's the best way to do it, is just doing a fresh install and just making sure that the router you have is Vista compatible, which is, I think, another, if people do a little bit of research, they'll save themselves a lot of headaches.
If you go with a clean install of Vista, you're much likely to get a better experience than getting one with all the software that's pre-configured with, you know, multiple antivirus softwares and multiple firewalls and all these kind of things that can come bundled with new machines.
Yeah. And it usually works right off the box. I guess what I've been seeing is a little trend now that a lot of these a lot of the big companies like HP and Dell are getting rid of, like, the extra, you know, crapware, they call it, the extra software that's included in these computers. I guess because most people aren't, you know, don't need those free trials. But, yeah, I think that's one of the big issues, is just the networking. You know, a lot of people don't know what a router is. They don't even know they have... people's homes, they don't even know they have a wireless signal coming off their router. or that their Xbox 360, there's really, like, I go to, I don't know if you have GameStops in England, but that's like the big thing here in the U.S. where people go and, you know, where people buy the video games. So you go to GameStops and some of the people that work there don't know that your Xbox can connect to a computer. Or, you know, and you'll find fewer people that know anything about Media Center and what it does. And but once people come to my house and they see my little setup and they see the stuff that it does, they're like, wow, you know, they're really amazed, because especially in terms of when you stream video, I mean, it looks great. The picture looks great. The sound sounds great. I think that's the main way I use mine, is I have like a library of movies that I put on my computer, especially like TV shows. Arrested Development, for example, you have the different episodes and you just click on it and watch it whenever you want to watch it. And my wife loves that part of it. So another thing, finding a remote control that would you just have to press one button and would change from, you know, your cable box to your 360 and change the audio and video and stuff of that nature. And I think what I'm using is the Harmony control for the 360. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but it's pretty nice. Once you program it once, you just press one button, and instead of going through three or four different remote controls and changing the audio and the video functions on your TV and on your surround sound, it just does it automatically for you.
Oh, that's good, because I have a separate remote for the sound, a separate for the TV, and then got the Xbox 360 remote, and you know, you end up with quite a few, don't you? And then you've got to, that's one of the things you said about sort of a Wi-Fi acceptance factor, you know, that you know, I've got to explain that you've got to put the AV receiver on, and then you've got to do this and do that, and if you can have it under with one button, that's going to be so much better.
Yeah. I had the same, you know, the problem. I just hated having all the remote controls around, you know, the living room. It was kind of expensive, but I think it was a good investment in terms of my wife got off my back, and even my mom knows how to use it. Comes in there and, you know, if I'm not around, she can just press the one little button that says cable, and they'll set everything up for her without me having to go out there and take out five remote controls.
So your Media Center PC, is it one that you built yourself, or was it one that you bought?
Well, it's one that I bought, well, like I told you, it was a Linux box. It had Mist TV on there, and all it is really like a ASUS P1 bare bones system, and it's in terms of it's not the most powerful computer. It's not a dual core. I got like a gig and a half of RAM in there, and I have two external hard drives that are 500 gigs each, and an internal hard drive that's 300 gigs, so it gives me about 1.3 terabytes. And that's one thing that I found is that in terms of streaming stuff, you don't need the most powerful computer in the world, or the most powerful processor. I think the most important thing in terms of streaming, especially to your Xbox, is just having at least a gig of RAM or more. So I think I had, at the beginning, I had a half a gig, and when I upgraded to 1.5 gig, there was a big difference in terms of like how quickly the menu reacted and how things loaded up.
So I think memory does make a big difference. I've noticed in any of the machines I've had, just going above that gig level really does make a huge difference for Vista.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Especially my computer had an integrated graphics card, which means that it shared the memory. So even though I had half a gig, but some of that was lost to the graphics processor. So it was nice when I upgraded to that 1 gig, because it really helped out a lot. But a lot of people, always hear complaints about the Windows Vista in terms of the drivers. And the only thing that I had is I had to go, I think it was my sound driver that was, it didn't give any sound, so I had to go download the old XP, and it worked, pretty good for me. But I know that that's one thing that people have, is just like, you put it in there, and I think you were talking about this last week, about having to go back to like an XP driver in order to get the Vista PC to work. I had to do that a couple of times, I think, especially with sound drivers, with audio drivers.
Right. And you found that then so upgrading to Vista, that your machine has been reliable and stable once you got the driver sorted out?
Oh, yeah. Once I got the driver sorted out, I've never been the biggest Microsoft fan, but I think it's, I talk to other people that say, well, the XP is more stable, but I really do believe the Vista is more stable. And in terms of security, I haven't had no problems with it, no spyware, none of those things that I experienced with the XP. So in terms of that, I think it's a better product. And it's just barely, it's just the first version, so I think it's just going to improve from now.
And then, so with your media center set up now and your experience, what you would say is the sort of the single thing that sort of bugs you the most about your current setup and with Vista Media Center?
The thing that bugs me, I told you before, I had two tuner cards in there, and I kind of gave up on streaming television, and one of the reasons was is that you needed like the special media center remote control in order to get the tuner card to work. And I went and I splurged on it, and it worked, but unless you have a cable card, and once you get a high definition television, and you get HBO on high def, and you get you start watching your sports channels on high def, and you get used to that, the high def feel, and that's what you really want to experience. But unless you have a cable card PC, you're not able to do that with the in terms of the television function on the media center. So I kind of gave up on that part of it, because I was thinking about it, unless I'm going to get the true, the same experience that I get with my cable box, I'm not going to kind of go back to the days of pre-HD. So that's one of the things that was my biggest disappointment. And I know it's not really anything that is Microsoft's fault. It's more of the providers, in terms of them putting different types of flags and the problems with cable card. But I think, that's one of the biggest complaints I've seen most people have also, is just in terms of when they get into the media center, the TV stuff. I know that when I listen to your show, I don't know what kind of, I don't know if you have like, you get like HBO on high def, or you have an extra cable box or anything, but I know in terms of that, especially when I want to watch Rome and it looks beautiful on the HD, TV. I don't want to go back to the, you know, the standard dev just to record it on my PC.
Yeah. And so is cable card something that you, if it was available, that's something you would go for on a mini center PC?
But you know what? I thought about it, and I read that they had a lot of problems with it, and I was about to get a, you know, a PC with a cable card, but I'm really now waiting for to be honest with you, hate my cable company. And I'm really waiting for the IPTV to come out, especially around my area. And I'm just going to go that way, and hopefully then I'll be able to use, at the beginning, my Xbox with the IPTV. But I haven't heard anything about, you know, Media Center coming out with or having IPTV. And I don't know if you heard anything about that in terms of Media Center also having IPTV capabilities. But That's one of the things. I'm probably not going to go with a cable card for that reason, because I really do think the IPTV is going to be a better product than the cable card. Mm. In terms of with the IPTV, you're going to get you have your DVR. You're going to be able to record whatever shows you want to record. You're also going to have your on demand, which is something you can't get with the cable. Again, going back, you know, once you get used to the on-demand menu, I don't know if you have that in England, but over here, you know, you have the on-demand and whatever you want to watch, you know, like if you miss a, you know, like an HBO show like The Sopranos, you go back and watch it or something of that nature. You get used to doing that on the, you know, on your regular cable box, and then going back again to some, you know, to something that takes away that function, you know, it's not, I guess. I don't like to go backwards in terms of, well, I already used to a certain way of doing things. It's sort of somebody took away your, you know, your DVR capabilities and said, well, now you have to just watch TV the regular way.
Yeah, I suppose, like you said, you don't want to go backwards. It's not something that I've got sort of access to, so it's not something that I'm going to miss at the moment. But for you, so your ideal world then would be sort of if the IPTV platform was built into Media Center and you had the option of using it on a PC and your Xbox, then and with the premium content and the interactive stuff, that'd be ideal for you.
Oh yeah, because that's the experience that I'm used to, and so that's kind of what my expectations are of it. I guess if I traveled a lot, I wouldn't mind buying like an extra box so I can record stuff and then stream it through Orb or something of that nature. But since I'm usually at home most of the time, that's not something that I'm going to go ahead and spend more money on or get something like a cable card, because then the people from the cable company have to come and set that up, and they're usually not the most smartest of folks that work there. And I saw that, you know, that's one of the biggest things. Some of the guys don't even know what a cable card is that work for the cable company. So that's what I'm waiting for. So that's what I'm really hoping for. I'm always looking to the IPTV stuff, because I think that's going to be the next, big trend, especially if you're able then to use, like your phone to, sort of like you use the little program you can use to program your TV from a web guide, something like that with an IPTV, but also you'd be able to watch sort of like a Sling box, all those things kind of coming together in one function, and hopefully that's what Microsoft is working on, because I know they on the AT&T here, it's the IPTV software is a I guess they call it Media Room now or something like that. It's a Microsoft software. But, you know, for example, I have a Zoom, and my Zoom is not very compatible with Media Center. And I just sometimes it kind of blows my mind how you have, you know, Microsoft has Zoom, they have a Media Room, they have Media Center, and they have the new Windows Home Server. And you figure that if you can sort of figure out a way to merge all those functionalities together into like one package, you'll have like the ultimate media software. I was thinking about getting the Windows Home Server, but then I read that my computer at home, I kind of use like a server anyways, you know, in terms of most of the stuff that I watch is through my Xbox. So I was looking forward to having the Windows Home Server with the Windows Media Center combined. So you would get the functionality of the Windows Home Service with the Media Center included. And hopefully we'll see it soon. I get kind of frustrated sometimes because, you know, I want to see it faster than what it is right now.
Well, I've got my Windows Home Server kind of integrated because I move content from one machine to the other, and the Home Server does the backup. But like you said, it'd be nice to have all these things together, especially we talked on previous shows about Zune and have all these things, you know, so they work nicely together so that you've got the sort of complete experience no matter which product that you get.
Yeah. And I found a little hack for the Zune that lets you play like your DVRMS files, which they recorded like TV shows, and it gives you more formats, which is nice. I wish now that I'm found Orb, I wish that I could just have like a Wi-Fi Max or something, then I could then just connect from my house and just stream the stuff that I want to listen to. Because I think that's very, I always show people the little Orb, and I think when people see that, it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I think you just have access to your media anywhere in the world as long as you have, you know, internet access and an account.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, isn't it, being able to just pull that. I mean, when I was over at CES early in the year, just being able to watch some of my TV that I recorded the night before while I was in the hotel, you know, through the connection, through my mobile, you know, connection, the GPRS connection, it is really good to be able to get that.
Yeah, and so I don't know if it was on your show, I don't know which podcast I listened to, but the iPhone doesn't have that capability where you can't stream stuff from Orb on the iPhone. So, you know, people who are used to, you know, using their smart devices to stream stuff are not going to be able to do that on an iPhone. It's kind of, again, it's kind of going backwards. So, you know, once you get used to a certain, or you see a certain thing that's, you know, kind of better. So, you know, like right now I use my Zoom, but, you know, when I use my, you know, my smart devices or when I stream stuff using Orb, I want to do that on my Zoom sometimes. And, you know, just it's kind of frustrating that it kind of limits the things that, you know, you want to do. And plus, I hate running the Media Center software and the Zune software, you know, two different separate softwares. Sometimes you get, you know, you get some problems with it in terms of the album art covers and things of that nature.
So seeing them synchronized together and playing together nicely would be much better for you then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think it would be better for Microsoft. I don't know if you come out with this different, you know, and they're pretty innovative in terms of the software and the different programs that came out, but, you know, I don't know, it doesn't take a genius to see, wow, if you just had, like, if you could just put all these things together somehow, you know, figure out a way, I think you'd have a great product. I think one of the things also that kills the, you know, the Media Center, especially the extender, is not being able to stream your DVDs, having to convert them to MPEGs or DVRMS files in order to watch them, which is great, except, you know, I know a lot of people, especially in Europe, that use subtitles a lot, and then you have to, you know, go an extra step in order to put the subtitles into the movies so you can watch them. And I'm waiting. I have an HD DVD drive on my 360, so I'm for the managed copy to come out, so I can start buying more. And once that happens, I'm going to start buying HD DVDs, and hopefully, I should be able to stream them to my, you know, to my Xbox. But I think that's one of the biggest things. If you think about media, you think about television, music, pictures, and movies. You know, and if one of those four things are missing, then it's not going to be a complete product. And I think that's another of the big flaws of it is, well, you know, how can you have this thing that's on your TV? And people, you know, like, people argue, well, you can just load up the DVD, but it's like the same thing. Well, 10 years ago, you loaded up CDs, but, you know, most people now, or most people that I know, don't go around. Once you find an iPod or some type of, you know, portable player, don't go around with a bunch of CDs loading them up all the time. You know, once you have them on a format where you can play them in different places, you get used to that experience. And I think that's one of the things that, and I know it's not, you know, again, it's not Microsoft's fault, but if there was a way where people could get used to that, watching, you know, having your DVDs or your movies in one, you know, one server, and then being able to having access to them, then I think people would start using Media Center more, become more mainstream product, you know, program instead of how it is now, which, you know, I think what I don't know what the figures are, but I don't know if a lot of people who do use the Media Center, out of 100 people that I come in contact, maybe one person or two people use the Media Center function, or even know that the Media Center function is on their Vista computer, or even know that you can, you know, you can hook it up to your Xbox 360. And so there's a lot in terms of just, I don't know if it's, I'm guessing it's lack of marketing, but there's a really lack of people knowing that you can use these different devices at certain work.
Yeah.
I think if it was easier to, you know, get those things done in terms of streaming DVDs, people would be way happier, you know. Especially, you know, if I see this a lot, people with families, if you have young kids and, you know, you put all those DVDs get used up and scratched up, and kids always, you know, want to watch the movie over and over again. But what about if you just had it already loaded up somewhere and you just clicked on it and played it, and you have to worry about, you know, your kid scratching up a $20 DVD and you having to go buy a new one? And that way, I think that's one of the flaws of it, is that you come out with this program, but there's some, I guess, I don't know, I read an article once that that's one of the biggest problems of the Media Center, is that it does a lot of things, but it doesn't do them well. It doesn't do one thing really well. I think the best functions, I think, is the pictures and the music. You know, it looks good. It looks great on the television, the pictures and listening to the music. And I think the two biggest flaws are the televisions and the movies and the videos. They're kind of limited,
and I think the content providers don't really help with, you know, like managed copy on HDVD will be exactly what we want, but we've just not seen it yet.
Yeah, and that's why you know, that's why I'm always reading the DRM articles, but exactly they're I guess they're more non-technical or whatever, but they don't see the benefit of. To be honest, I wasn't a big DVD person, but since I bought my system, I had bought over 15 to 20 DVDs since April, because of, I can just load them up and watch them when I want to watch them, you know, and if I stop watching them, I can come back and watch, because of the function of it, you know, I'm probably spending more money on movies than I did before.
Yeah.
But they don't see it that way. I understand their thing about sort of, you know, they want to protect their content, but also, you know, things are changing, and the expectations of consumers are changing, in terms of, once you get used to having sort of like an iPod where you have stuff loaded up, you know, people load up their, and I think this is one of the biggest things, that people always load up their music, and then they want to load up their DVDs, and it's when they discover this, you know, some type of protection on there, and they get kind of frustrated that they can't watch the DVD like they can listen to their songs. But you're right about the, you know, they've kind of been dragging their feet on the managed copy, and that's one of the reason I got an HD DVD, because I think they're more likely to come out with managed copies first. So I'm kind of supporting that part of the, I guess of the two systems that are competing right now.
I mean, it sounds like you're getting good use out of your Media Center, and it's really good to hear sort of someone who's just an enthusiast for the product and wants to push the product further. And it's good to get you on the show to talk about that.
Well, thanks, Ian. I appreciate it. I really enjoy your show. I always learn something new. I mean, I would have never downloaded Orb or Radio Time or a lot of the plugins that I have without listening to your show. I'm like, oh, you can do that with that? And then I go out and try to see if I can guinea pig out someone. So it's always great. I think it's, you know, your show gives us a lot of information instead of going out there and looking at, oh, you know, how to do things. You can, it's kind of a gateway to find information.
Yeah, and it's great to talk to a real-life listener.
Well, thanks.
And it's the reason why I do the show.
Yeah, I'm, like I said, I'm a teacher. I was coaching last year. I'm not coaching this year, but I'm a teacher. So, you know, if a teacher can learn it, anybody can learn it. Just go. That's one of the things that I love about, I guess, the Media Center community, is they're pretty helpful. And if you go to the green button and look around and ask a question, somebody always has an answer for you. So, you know, that's great about the community, that if you want help, there's always someone there that will, you know, provide the information or will find, you know, will guide you to a place where you can find the solution to your problem.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It is a great community to be a part of.
That's why, you know, when new people go in there and they ask about stuff, I kind of always want to help them out because, you know, I had sort of people help me out when I first started. So I want to kind of give back in that sense. And I just think, I think the Media Center does have, you know, a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Even with its flaws, I think it has a way of revolutionizing the way people, you know, enjoy their media.
Well, I do appreciate you taking your time to come on the show today. I said it is really great to talk to a listener and to be the first. It's great for me to have you on as the first person on the Real World feature.
Oh, thank you.
And keep up with the Media Centre and keep on the forums and keep in touch, and we'll maybe talk to you in maybe a year's time and see how the Media Centre has progressed.
Okay. Well, thank you. You have a good day.
Thanks to Carlos. I'm looking to do more real world interviews. So if you're a Media Centre enthusiast and like to come on the show, talk about how you use it, what you'd like to see changes, what it's plus, what it's minuses, send me an email, ian@thisalifestyle.com, and we'll see if we can work something out. So thanks for listening. Don't forget Peter Neer's stuff, dropthebox.ca. October 19th is the final date for that. I'll see you around on the forums. Don't forget your nominations for the Media Centre Show Awards. See you next week. Bye.